I'm excited to do this class again with Stephanie. I love working with Stephanie. I love what, Stephanie, you bring to this conversation about conflict and neuroscience and working with children and being parents and all that. And the idea is that we'll do that plus some of the mediation work. I think of it as mediating our lives, so not just for people that want to be mediators professionally out in the world, but how to mediate conflict in general, mediate conflict within our own heads, within ourselves. Then if we're part of a conflict, how we can mediate our own conflicts with others, including our children, our spouses, our family members, and also, though, how we can help other people who are in conflict, like our children if they're fighting with each other, or anybody if there's a conflict going on, that we can lend our skills and to learn how to do that. So we're going to give you a little taste of that throughout the 6 weeks and a chance to practice a bit. And I'm really just happy to be doing this. I really like offering this for people working with children.
Thank you, John. And so this again, it's Stephanie, and I'm the mother of three children. My oldest son will be 14 next month, and then I have a 10-year-old, and then I have a 6-year-old girl who joined us through adoption. So that was a new learning curve for us. Obviously, each child is a new beginning, and when trauma is part of the history of a child, then obviously that brings some other issues at hand for the whole family. And this is actually how I came across, really by my desire to better understand my daughter and support her. I started reading about how trauma affects the developing brain, and so I started learning some things about neuroscience. And I found that extremely helpful, not only in helping her, but really in understanding myself. And so this is especially what I hope to support you with, just by giving you a little pieces here and there to really help you understand how our brain works and how we work, and hopefully create more self-understanding. And from that self-understanding, then being able to reach our children with understanding. My big first exposure to NVC was through the Peer Parent Leadership Program. And I have been involved in the Peer Parent Leadership Program ever since. It's a wonderful program on parenting and leadership. So I guess I said enough for right now about me, and would like then to get started. So I would like to start by offering a little bit of what I was hoping to share today.
And Stephanie, how about we just let people know the structure that we intend to use in terms of that Stephanie will present a little bit related to neuroscience and maybe some experiential things woven into that. And then after she's done with that part, then I will pick up with some mediation practice and also be weaving in things that Stephanie's been mentioning. So that's more or less how we break down the call. Anything you want to add to that, Stephanie, kind of how we, our overarching structure?
No, I actually appreciate you wanting to mention that, just for, you know, supporting clarity and predictability. So, the piece that I would like to share with all of you today, hopefully as a contribution, is captured in the PowerPoint presentation that I made available. So I will, you know, loosely follow the structure of the slides, but not walk through each of them. For me, you know, the core piece here is that in my journey with NVC and understanding that whatever the situation I am facing, whether it's with my kids or really with anyone, or even if just in myself, I always have three options. One is self-empathy, another one is empathy, and the third one is self-expression. And so trying to integrate and live those three options more and more in my life, I have come to see that they all share what I consider a crucial skill that is important and really essential for me at any point, any moment in my life, and especially crucial when I am experiencing some kind of conflict, whether it's between the kids or between me and one of the kids or, you know, whatever situation of conflict I am in. But it's really about learning to be present. And so I have been working now on this, how to be more present, you know, how to make myself present, how to be really there where I am fully. And so I would like to just bring some, you know, some of the things that I have found helpful on my own journey. So presence is basically for me the foundation to bringing peace whenever there is a conflict. So if you look at the, I believe that's the third slide, I mentioned slowing down. And you know, this, you may have heard it tons of times, and so did I. And really, until I started practicing, I didn't really experience the benefits of it. I have really noticed that, you know, speed and pacing has a lot of to do with where I'm at in my head, you know, if I'm really present with what I'm doing or not. So really choosing a more deliberate speed and pacing of my walking when I just go and do, you know, some laundry. So how do I move around the house and take the steps, all of that. Just being more deliberate in my movements, in slowing down, it allows me for a more conscious presence of myself and where I'm at and my environment. And just yesterday, as an NVC Academy coordinator, I was in the last call with Robert Gonzalez on self-compassion, and he mentioned this sentence, which I jotted down, and I thought, oh, I want to share that with all of you. He said, jackals feed on speed. And so that really resonated with me, because the faster I go, the less I'm aware of my movements, my behaviors, and my thinking. So the more I can slow down, the more I can become conscious of what's going on in myself. The second practice is really learning to stay in the present moment. And so here I'm just wanting to offer you a reality check. I have been doing that for quite some time now. Just stop during the day, different moments, and ask myself, where am I right now? Am I really there with my son reading a book, or looking at the flowers with my daughter, or folding the laundry, or being on that phone call? Where am I? Am I really here? And so just creating this habit, And so maybe, I want to extend that to you right now. If you want to ask yourself, where am I right now? Am I on this call, or am I, somewhere else in my thinking? Am I thinking about, lunch, or, the next appointment, or the phone call I forgot to make? And so just bring ourselves back to the present moment with compassion. And another thing is just connect with my body. Really take a moment and connect with my body and see, okay, how am I sitting right now? I'm in front of the computer. How are my legs? How is my back? And just really embody my body. And so that also helps me to really be fully present. So just connect fully with my own body. And I'm drawn to share one sentence that I read last night by a Buddhist teacher, Pema Chodron, and she writes, "The most heartbreaking thing of all is how we cheat ourselves out of the present moment." And so it captures a little bit of, what I'm trying to share here. When she speaks about cheating, for me it's about, missing an opportunity to be fully alive and to be fully present with and be in this flow of life. So that is a little bit of what, I am trying to incorporate more and more in my life, and that I'm wanting to propose to you. So I don't know about you. For me, it's a lot about, multitasking, realizing how often I try to do several things at the same time, and so committing myself to staying right where I am and doing what I'm doing. So these are, some of the things that I have found helpful. So the slowing down, the checking in, where am I in this moment, and the anchoring myself in the body. I have heard friends of mine who have been, developing other ways also and exploring, that it has been very helpful to them, for instance, to have an image. So at this point, I would like to ask you, what is your image? What is your visual? Or it could be an audio, just like a sentence. that would help you in bringing you back into the present moment when you find yourself not being in the present. And again, feel free to explore. And you know, I just put some possible visuals and some possible sentences. But that could be also a way that you could find helpful to support yourself in, you know, whenever you see yourself drifting or triggered, just bring up this image that for you talks about, you know, being present to yourself and reconnecting with yourself. And now I would like for all of us to actually experience what I have found as one of the most helpful ways in bringing myself to the present moment. And this is the mindful breathing. And so here, rather than, you know, talking about it, I would like for all of us to just take 1 minute and experience that. So if you are all willing to just take a comfortable sitting position that you can hold for a minute and a half, and just bring your awareness to the natural flow of your breath. You are just following your breath. You're not trying to change it in any way. Just be aware how the breath comes in and goes out. You may notice perhaps your abdomen expanding with the inhalation and contracting with the exhalation. You may be perhaps aware of the flow of air coming through your nostrils while you breathe. You may connect with your lungs expanding and collapsing. Just follow your breath in and out. Yourself, maybe you can repeat mentally, breathing in, breathing out. So I have found this practice to be extremely powerful, especially when something is really up for me in terms of feeling somehow triggered or even just really exhausted or tired. So I have found it helpful to have like a 5 or 10 minutes practice daily. And I have found that by having this, it's easier, you know, during the day to just have this moment. It's like a mini retreat of a minute, you know, when I can connect with my breath. And I would like to pause and hear any reactions to this brief exercise. Just wanting to hear from one or two of you how this breathing exercise was for you. Anyone willing to share? Press 1, please. Okay, Jennifer.
I just wanted to thank you for starting it with that, because I was kind of scrambling this morning to get things done so I could sit here and focus. There was still kind of an anxious energy running through my body. And so it was nice to stop and breathe and just breathe out the anxiousness that I didn't realize was still running. So I really appreciated you stopping to do that.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah. Thank you. Jen.
Yes, I guess I'm just enjoying a sense of calm as I connect with my breath and enjoying the spaciousness. The process of doing that.
Thank you. Okay, so looking for more ways about how to be present, how to bring myself to present whenever my mind wanders. And by the way, I mean, this is exactly what the mind does. So I want to clarify that I'm not entailing in any way that, you know, we are doing something wrong when our mind wanders and we are thinking about the future, we are triggered by the past, and we are finding ourselves multitasking. This is exactly what, you know, our mind is conditioned to be doing, and the wandering is, you know, one of the skills, actually, that, you know, a mind can have. And what I'm suggesting here is just to train our mind to focus and to be more deliberate where we want to focus our attention and our energy. Again, it's not about, you know, a better way or a right way. It's what I have found helpful to really be more present and therefore more alive and more authentic in relationships and with myself, wanting to mention that. So I'm guessing you have all encountered the concept of self-empathy in NVC. So I will briefly touch upon it. And actually, again, wanting for you to have an experience. And so my desire is for you to experience that in dyads. And what I would like for you to do in your dyads is really to take a couple of minutes each and think of a difficult situation of conflict with, you know, with your children, for instance. Or, you know, a conflict between the kids that comes up recurrently, and just observe that in your mind, because right now it's not happening, but just bring this image in your mind and then ask yourself, how am I feeling right now thinking about this? And what is it that I'm needing? And the way I would like for you to do that is really by incorporating also this concept of, you know, slowing down and pausing and taking a breath. And so my suggestion would be to, in your dyads, to really connect with your feelings and bodily sensations and take a deep breath. Breathe into it and then express it. And then take a breath again before you, you know, try to connect with the needs that are connected to the feelings. And so just give yourself this spaciousness. And so, yes, so just let's say I give you 5 minutes total, and you will have, let's say, 2.5 minutes each, and then we come back into the main room as a whole group. And again, it's basically a moment of self-empathy and really, really slowing it down and taking a breath and fully connecting with your body and the sensations that you are experiencing. And so here we go. So welcome back into the main room. I would just enjoy hearing from one or two people how that was for you. Jen, go ahead.
I guess I enjoyed slowing down because it made me more curious about the opportunity to get more curious and get some perspective, you know, get more clear about what's going on in me. And what I was needing was clarity. So that was helpful to see, and I felt encouraged that I was more curious about and encouraged.
So it brought some openness in you. Are you feeling complete, Jen?
Yes, I am. Thanks.
Kelly?
I found that by slowing down, by looking at my feelings and needs, I was able to separate myself from their conflict, and that was very helpful.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm guessing, John, you could have a lot to say about it. But in my experience, yes, that's really crucial. When I'm able, you know, to create some distance and some space, then what I find is that actually, you know, I'm more equipped to contribute to some understanding between the kids when there is a conflict. When I don't make this time and, you know, am somehow enmeshed in the conflict, then I'm not as useful as I would like to be. Don't wanting to add anything to that particular thing that Kelly's bringing up.
Not right in this moment. I will in a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if you, Stephanie, I want to ask you to do something that maybe you are planning to do in like the next session, but I just thought it might be nice to share a little bit from a neuroscience perspective about, you know, what goes on at a brain level of being present, slowing down, what happens to us when we lose that ability. I just really enjoy you talking about that. So if there's any little nugget or a few nuggets of that you want to offer to people, kind of that context to what we're doing right now, I'd enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you, John. And, you know, it's my plan for the next session to really go into some of the pieces that you have heard me share in the last teleclass series. For right now, what I would like to share, you know, hearing your question is really, let's put it this way, whenever we are triggered or, you know, we are in this rush mode and we are multitasking, we are actually not tapping into our full brain. So somehow some parts, especially parts of the more executive functions of our brain, get disconnected. And so the more we are able to slow down and take a breath and be in the present moment, connect with our body, the more we are being fully online again with our brain. So we are reintegrating the different systems of the brain to really work as one brain. That actually leads me into, you know, the next session that I wanted to share before then handing it over to you, John, is practicing, you know, connecting with the intention. I have found that also extremely helpful to bring myself back into the present moment. And again, what is happening here on a neurological level is really that I'm tapping, when I connect with my intention, I'm tapping into the higher executive functions of the brain. And so I'm really having my full neocortex working at full capacity. And basically, I'm realigning, again, different systems within the brain. And I don't know, I'm feeling a little hesitant using, you know, words, because I don't want to sound as somebody who knows more than what I'm actually knowing. I'm not, obviously, a neuroscientist. But basically, when we connect with our intention, we reintegrate the prefrontal cortex with the limbic system, the limbic system being more of the you know, emotional part of our brain, and the prefrontal cortex being more the executive functions. So really, our brain works more at unison. And so there are different ways in which I have found helpful connecting with my intention. One is being aware of childhood needs, and to bring that into my perspective. And I work a lot with a certified trainer, Ingrid Bauer, and she likes to make this distinction between the long-term needs and the short-term needs, or at least I have heard her mainly make this distinction. So, you know, when we are, for instance, witnessing a conflict between the kids, the needs, the short-term needs that may be up for us are about peace and quiet and harmony and some ease in the house and all of that. And obviously, I want to hold that in my awareness, and I also want to hold my long-term needs. And my long-term needs may be something about, you know, the quality of relation that I want to have with my children, that I want my children to have between them or among them, and the quality of relation that I want them to have within themselves, so with, you know, their own being. So if I tie that all in, it usually, again, it creates a different space where then I can connect differently with myself, my longings, and then with my children. Another piece that, you know, for me is really important and has been extremely helpful, it, again, in terms of, you know, a piece of neuroscience that helped me understand better one of the principles of NVC, is that our brain is neurobiologically designed to be in relationship. And basically, the brain is hardwired not to be dependent, not to be independent, but to be interdependent. A whole lot could be said around it, but I just leave it to that. But this really helped me in understanding how we affect each other and how my level of presence and calm can affect my child. And so this piece, yes, has helped me understand, you know, and really connect on a different level what it means to prioritize connection, that everybody's needs matter in the same way, equally. And another piece that I encountered through brain science is, which I understand as pointing to what NVC states when it shares that all actions are an attempt to meet a need, is that our body-mind system, because really body and mind are not separated, so, you know, scientists talk about it as one system, the body-mind system. All it does at any given moment is to try to regain equilibrium. So that's all we are trying to do, to reach again a level of wellness when there is some disequilibrium going on. And so we are always attempting to meet our needs. So just bringing that back as a reminder, it reconnects me with the intention of how I want to show up in my life with my children. And so the last thing that I would like to touch upon is that I would like to look in the future sessions more clearly at behavior and at some ways to understand behavior. For right now, you know, obviously from NVC we know that it's an attempt to meet a need. And from other readings that I have been doing, it's very clear to me that behavior is a communication. And so, this is another way I can connect with my intention to really uphold this understanding that behavior is a communication. And many times it's unconscious. I mean, most of our behavior is, 90%, scientists say, of behavior is fueled from unconscious emotions, unconscious thinking, and we would say, you know, from needs that we may not be aware of. So, again, when encountering some behaviors in my children which may seem a little puzzling to me, I want to remember that. Or, you know, my own behavior is puzzling to myself. I want to, you know, remind myself, okay, a lot of it is unconscious, but all I'm trying to do is attempt to meet a need, regain some sense of balance and equilibrium, and I'm just trying to communicate something. So what is it that I'm trying to communicate? Or what is it that my children want to communicate to me, even unconsciously? And my proposal for this week to bring my little piece to closure is to just take the time during this week to play a little bit with these different practices of presence that I have shared with you and see what resonates with you, what is helpful to you in bringing you into full presence. And then to ask yourself, especially when you experience a conflict with your kids or, you know, something that is a little difficult to handle for you, in at least in the beginning moments, what can I do in this very moment to improve the relationship with my child? And usually what I have found is that, you know, the first step is something with myself, within myself. So a request of myself, and from that I can then figure out what is it that I can do to improve my relationship with my kid at this moment. And with that said, I want to check if there are any questions or comments about this last piece before I turn it over to John for looking at formal mediation.
I just want to say to everybody, if the neuroscience pieces that Stephanie mentioned, if that went a little fast for you or you want to know more, that I saw it as a bit of a preview for next time. Stephanie's going to go into more depth with what she brought up just now. So if you don't have to worry that you didn't get it all. I was relating to it as just giving you a kind of a sense of the different things that we're going to look at and go more deeply into. So, but if there are any comments, questions before we move into my mediation piece.
I'm not seeing any hands.
Okay.
So I turn it over to you, John.
Okay. And I actually have a request that goes with what Stephanie just asked of you. And it's to do, this is something we ask people in our mediation programs. So I'll ask it of you too. Just, if even just for this, for our 6 weeks together, if you're willing to do this, to make it, you know, really doable. If you don't already do this, you may. But the request is that once a day, you set aside some time to do a presence practice, something that develops that sense of presence in the ways that Stephanie talked about, whether it's a breathing practice, meditation, something that helps you connect with yourself, find that peace in yourself, even if it's for only 5 minutes a day, but to do it every day for the 6 weeks that we're doing this class together. And then, of course, throughout the day, if you can remember, as Stephanie was saying, to pause and connect with yourself and become present, that as well. But I also wanted to add this request of, if you don't have a daily practice, to find a little time to do this, you know, a quiet time to do this, I request that you take that on as well, because I believe it will. It's a skill that the more we do it, the more we have access to it in the moment when there is conflict, to move into that more inner calm place. Okay.
If I may add,
so what
John,
Yeah.
The request of John to do it daily is because, you know, the brain needs repetition, regular repetition, in order to build new pathways. So if we do an hour meditation once every 3 weeks, it will not create new neuropaths the way that 5 minutes daily will do. So that's why, you know, the daily thing is so important. Thank you, John.
Okay. So what I like calling NVC mediation, and again, I'm saying that for me, that's a very broad, I define mediation very broadly to be mediating within ourselves, conflicts within ourselves, conflicts we have with others, and also helping other people who are in conflict. And with NVC, we have the language of connection, this language of needs, and connecting observations and feelings and requests to what our needs are, to have this language of needs. And we have the skills that Stephanie mentioned of empathy with ourselves, empathy with others, and how we express. And I found it, in addition to that language and those skills, having maps, I think of them as maps for conflict, navigating conflict, are really been invaluable for me as I've been developing this mediation focus. So if I have a map of how to mediate a conflict, I can then apply the language and the skills that I have. And I find if I don't have what I'm calling a map, it's not as easy to use those skills. So that I have them, and yet in the heat of the intensity, a rising intensity that happens when we get what we call triggered, Stephanie's been using that word, I like it, as a way to talk about when we go into that fight, flight, or freeze reaction, an evolutionary response that all life forms have. So we're very much connected to all of life in that way, that we can go into a survival mode. And I think that's really what, in my view, that's what happens in conflict, is that's to some degree, in some way, gets activated within us. The fight, flight, or freeze response that it's trying to protect our lives and protect those we care about. So getting triggered that way, and then how to move from getting triggered back to connection. Connection within ourselves and connection with others. What Stephanie said is our natural state. So I like that the brain scientists are finding that as well, that it's a natural way for us to be as human beings, to be in connection with ourselves and others. But when we get triggered into this fight, flight, freeze reaction, then we lose that ability. The brain shifts. The actual physiology and chemistry within it all shifts, so that we're operating in a whole different way. Different parts of our brains are working, and we're not wanting to connect. We're wanting to protect and fight or flee. So how to come back to connection. And again, this idea of having a map, not just the language and the skills. So I'm going to present one of the maps, the one that Ike Lasser and I started with, that we got from Marshall Rosenberg. We just heard how Marshall talked about mediation in over his 40 years of traveling around and teaching and working with people. He came up with a way to mediate conflict, and we started with that as the first thing that we did together, Ike and I, in developing this training about 8 years ago. So I'll present that to you in a moment. And I see it, though, is it's going to be the what we call the formal mediation process. So if you have two people, say, with you that agree to have someone help them with their conflict, help them with their conversation between them, and we could play that role for them. We think of that as formal mediation. Informal mediation is where the people in front of us have not asked us to help, but we want to step in to meet our own needs, to contribute to harmony or connection in the world. To meet our own needs for that, we might want to lend our skills, but people haven't asked us to mediate. So it could be our children, a fight breaking out, or wherever. But I'm going to present the model. Both of those would be helping others, but I want to offer it to you primarily in this class today as the model that's when people have agreed that they'll have some kind of mediator with them. And what's the step? What are the steps? What's the process of how to help facilitate people to hear each other and to find solutions that they can enjoy contributing to one another's well-being. But the thing I want to say about that, even if you have no intention of being a mediator in any way, you probably do it. If you have children, you do it anyways. But that this formal mediation model I find really useful as a way to start learning about the skills of mediating, so applying NVC skills to mediation and mediating conflict. So my hope is that you could see as a way to just start developing presence and some kind of comfort might be too strong, but getting used to being present with conflict in a different way by moving through the roles of this three-chair triad mediation process, a practice where you can practice with conflict and getting comfortable with dealing with conflict in a new way and staying more present with conflict. So that's one of the goals that I have, to contribute to you developing that, some ease and presence when conflict arises. Something I also find very valuable in the training is to put real situations into the three chairs. Three chairs being two disputants and a mediator. And in this class, it'd be two children and an adult that's mediating, just for the sake of our practice together. And so to put into these practice situations that I want to do with you, to use things that are real for you, because I believe when we work with things that are real, it heightens the growth and the development, the personal development that happens within us, the way our neural pathways grow and evolve. I think there's something about when we use conflicts that are real and we really find, even if we're role-playing somebody else, we find something real in it, it enhances how we develop our capacity. So I'm going to ask you if you're willing to work with things that are real for you when we do the conflict work. The last thing I want to do before going into a little breakout group is to tell you the five steps of the formal mediation model. So there are five steps and nine skills. And I don't like the five steps in the sense of if it's too rigid, thinking that it becomes this static thing that you should do. So it's not for that purpose. It's just to give some guidance when you're in conflict. Okay. And we got this from Marshall. We just kind of made it more formalized, this process. So the first step, step one, if I'm the mediator between two people, two others, two disputants, was there, two conflictants, step one is to see who wants to go first in terms of talking, of what they want the other person to hear. And let's say person A talks first, and this, again, could be a child that we work with. And what do they want the other to hear? And step one is to empathize with that, to really listen and focus on what they're trying to communicate and to get down to what their needs are ultimately. So what needs are they trying to communicate or are not being met in this conflict, this situation? That's step one. Step two is to go over to person B, or child B, and say, I want to hear from you also. I'm just wondering if first you feel willing to say what you heard person A say, what the needs are that you heard. I heard they have a need for care. Are you willing to say that back to them, that this need for care? Then they either do or they don't. But that's step two, to ask the other person, person B, to reflect back what they heard, the needs, especially the needs of person A. Step three is then to say, okay, person B, what would you like to say right now? What would you like person A to hear right now that's important to you about this situation? Then they say what they say, and step three is to empathize with that person and really hear what's going on in them, what's alive in them, how they're seeing things, what they're feeling, and then getting to what their needs are. And some of you mentioned you work with younger children, so how do we put this language into a way that the children can relate to? We'll talk about that as we go. But anyways, to try to get to some, maybe it's just a want, not a full need the way we would do it with adults, but something along the lines, a want that's a little bit more general, maybe. And that step three is to get that from person B. Then step four is to go back over to person A or child A and say, would you, now I want to hear again from you, would you first be willing to say what you heard child B wants? I heard that they want play. They want to really have fun and play right now. Would you say that back? So then they either do or they don't do that. So those are the first four steps, and we think of that as the connection phase, the just getting understanding and connection to start happening. And then the fifth step we think of as the solution requests, or moving towards what once there is some understanding of what both people want, at some kind of need realm, hopefully, then to see what requests they have of what they want to offer, what they want to ask for, that they might could enjoy contributing to one another's well-being. And to help clarify what are those requests, lend our skills a bit about making a request in a way that's present, positive, action language that is not a demand and is trying to create, you know, get everybody's needs met. So just lending our skills, and that, think of it as the agreement phase or the solution phase. And sometimes just going into that stimulates more upset than you go back to the one through four of getting understanding and connection to happen. So those are the five steps. And in doing those five steps, we've found there are nine mediation skills, which are really just an expansion of the basic skills of self-empathy, empathy for self, empathy for other, and self-expression. It's really an expansion of that into nine, and so I'm not going to go through all those nine skills in this course, but just so you know that there, we'll be talking about a number of them as we go. So those are the five steps, and that's my what I would call a map. So it's not the territory. There are sort of infinite things you can do in the moment of dealing with a conflict, but I find it just a useful framework to have, of kind of knowing what I could do next, what are my choices and options, and how I can move from one option to the next option, and just to kind of tracking and where I am in the conversation when I'm trying to help somebody else. And again, we'll talk about other ways to apply this if mediating in yourself or mediating with somebody else, but with yourself, you're part of the conflict. But this one, just starting off with this map that's about helping other people who are in conflict. And also another caveat is, especially with children who may not, this you might kind of spontaneously come upon a fight breaking out. You might not have the full agreement that we all get in a formal mediation, but I'm going to ask you to practice with this model as if you do, because we'll get to the harder stuff later, but just to make it sort of one level of difficulty at a time, to practice putting these real conflicts in your life that come up when you might want to step in and help other children that you work with, that your children or others, and to just imagine that would be, that they've agreed that, okay, you're going to help facilitate them working it out, and we'll just practice these steps and applying the skills to these steps. I'm going to do that, some examples of it with you, but I'd like to have you go into groups of three, not to try to do it yet, but just to talk a little bit for about 5 minutes, just to talk about what some situations in your life where you might apply this map, this model of mediating conflict. And you could also discuss if you had any reactions to hearing me talk about this with each other. But I really would like you to get a little bit of clarity on what situations you might want to work with for the rest of our call and for other subsequent calls. What are some important conflicts that come up in your life that you would want to work with for the context of this call? Anybody have anything before we go into groups to just discuss that? Okay.
Welcome back into the main room.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is go through, just do a couple demos with you. And I'll do one, and then if anyone else wants to mediate, well, we can do that too. Does somebody have a situation when you got in touch with that you'd like to, what we say, put into the chairs? Okay, Kelly.
I have two boys, and we'll put Will in one chair and Tom in the other. And I say, would one of you be willing to go get the newspaper off the driveway? And they say, you do it, you do it. And they argue over who will do it. And neither will go do it. But they start fighting to each other, telling each other to go do it.
Okay. All right.
Is that okay?
So how about
situation?
Yeah. How old is Will?
12.
He's 12? How old is Tom?
10.
Tom is 10. Okay. How about you play one of them?
Okay.
Who do you want to play, Will or Tom?
Will.
You'll be Will. Okay. And is someone willing to play Tom? Actually, Taylor, are you willing to play Tom?
Sure.
Okay. So you're Tom. Taylor is Tom. Kelly is Will. I'm going to play you, Kelly. So
okay.
I'll be Mom. All right. And again, I want to say that I know from my own experience very well how these things just sort of arise, and it's about sort of stepping into them. But I'm going to set it up a little differently to model the practice, how to practice this. So I'm going to set it up as if Will and Tom are willing to have me, Mom, facilitate this conversation between you. Okay? So we're going to sort of slow it down and make it more like what would happen in a formal mediation process. And then later on we'll get to the doing the informal when it moves much more quickly. But we'll start off slow here. So I'm just going to start off here. Okay, Will and Tom, I'd like to see if I can help you work through this conflict a bit here. Who'd like to go first, and what you'd like the other to hear from you right now? Who'd like to go first?
I'll go first.
And me. So Will, would you maybe like to?
Yes, I'm Will.
Okay, Will, what would you like Tom to hear right now, Will?
Tom to get the paper.
Hmm. So you'd really like him to get the paper. And,
yes.
And maybe help him understand why you want him to do it.
I always do it. He never does it.
So your sense is that you do things like this much more often than he does?
Yes.
And you'd like him to do it. Okay, so
yeah.
Is it something about taking turns and wanting it there to kind of be that equality between you of doing the things around the house that I ask you to do?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel
so
I do more, yeah.
You have the sense that you do more, and you'd like it to be more equal between you in terms of the things that you do to help out around the house.
Yes.
Yeah. And let me just do a pause to say out loud what's going on inside of me. So pausing the role play, I'm trying to basically do what Stephanie talked about earlier, to be present. I'm slowing myself down inside by focusing on my breath and being connected to my needs that I'm trying to meet in supporting this conversation. So my needs for actually love and care and connection between people I really love. You know, so I'm trying to be in touch with my needs and a need to be present, to really kind of connect and be present to what's happening right now. And then I'm trying to offer that same presence to Will and Tom. This quality of really being with, in this case, with Will, and really be there and get what he's trying to say. And the first thing I'm doing is just to have my attention fully there, and then I'm just trying to get the gist of it, the what I call the understanding. And all this, by the way, is in one of the handouts on the steps of the mediation process, and these elements of empathy, which I'm going through right now. Empathy being present, getting the understanding of what's going on, and then trying to get to some needs. So far, my sense is I've done those three things, that kind of silent presence and understanding, and then trying to get the gist of it, and gotten to a need here for Will related to equality. So now I'm going to go back into the role play. Okay, Will. Well, I'd like to go over to your brother and see what he's hearing here. How's that sound to you?
Well, I think that he's just a baby, and he doesn't he's afraid to go outside and get the paper in the morning.
So is it you're a little worried that maybe you're not going to get this sort of have a sense of this equality between you around the things that you do to help in the house, and you really want that? Is that kind of worried
that
he might do or say some things where you wouldn't get that, and you really want that sense of there being more equality between you about doing these things in the house?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I'd like to go to Tom and just kind of see what's going on for him and see what he's hearing is important to you. All right? So, Tom, I want to hear how you see what's going on here in this interaction you've been having with your brother. But I'm wondering if first you feel willing to just say what you heard is important to Will. I'm not asking you to agree with you're the one that goes and gets the paper or anything like that, not to agree with doing anything, but just to let Will know that you heard what's important to him. I heard that what's important to him is he wants a kind of equality, a being equal between you in terms of the things you both do to help out in the house. Are you willing to let him know, say that back to him, that you heard what's important to him about that? So let me do another timeout. Well, hold on, let me do another timeout. Now, I'm going to request of Taylor, playing the role, to do that. Now, in real life, maybe Tom wouldn't be ready to do that, to say back what he heard. Okay, but I want to give you, just to kind of take it one step of difficulty at a time, to see that. And this is something when you're role-playing, like in my role here as the mediator, you can ask the disputants to play in a way that's going to be what we call in your learning zone. So not too difficult, and if it's too easy, you can ask them to play it harder. But this is a way we call dial the difficulty. And I'm saying all this because at some point I'm going to ask you to practice doing what I'm doing now. Okay? So I'm going to ask Taylor, playing the role of Tom, if you would do your best to say back what you're hearing there. Okay, so let's go back into the role. So, Tom, I'm wondering if you feel willing to say that back.
Yeah, he wants things to be equal.
Yeah. Thanks. So, what do you want Will to hear? What's going on for you about this?
Well, I think he does such a good job. He ought to keep doing it.
Uh-huh. You mean you like the way he does help out around the house? You admire how he does that?
Well, he's good at getting the paper.
Ah, just in getting the paper, he's good at, you see him being good at that, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. So you think he would do a better job than you of getting the paper?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because it doesn't matter to me as much.
So is it something about you want to see me, your mom, get helped out as much as I can be, and you think you like how Will might be able to help me out right now?
Yeah, better than me.
So is it caring about me right now? You're kind of caring about wanting me to get the best help that I could get right now?
No, I don't want to do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you maybe really, it wouldn't be very fun for you right now to go get the paper, is that right?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And what wouldn't be fun about it for you? What do you want Will to hear about that?
I don't know. It's not that, you know, I'd rather do some other things.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So you really want to do some things that are going to be more fun right now. And that doesn't sound fun to you to help me out with doing that right now.
Right. Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So you want to do things that are going to, that you, is it something that, like, you want to be able to really choose what you do and not, like, not being told what you have to do or you should do, but you want to,
yeah,
what would be fun, you want to choose what's fun for you, and you want to choose that for yourself and not be told what you have to do.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, that works
okay.
for me.
Okay, so to have some choice to do what's important to you, what you want to do.
For you. Yeah, Mom.
Okay, all right. All right. So I want to go back over to Will and say, Will, again, without needing to get into agreeing of who's going to get the paper or not, or giving up anything that you don't want to, just I'm only asking you to say back to each other what you're hearing. So if you're willing to let Tom know, just to hear what's important to him. I hear what's important to him is having some choice about what he does to help me or to do things that are important to him, but that he could choose, that would be more fun for him to choose. Are you willing to just let him know you hear that's what's something that's keeping him from wanting to do that, his wanting to choose things for himself?
Yeah, I hear that. He wants to choose.
So how is it for you to hear that?
I think he chooses, and I still get stuck getting the paper.
Yeah. So you also want to choose.
Yeah, I want to choose too.
Well, can you think of either one of you think of a way that you could both have that sense of choice over what you do, and that there could be equal quality between you, kind of being able to have things be equal in how you help out with things. Can you, either one of you, think of something you would like to do both of that?
He could do the dishes, and then I'll go get the paper.
How would that be, Will?
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah?
Really?
But I think we should change tomorrow. Switch.
Oh, so just for today, you could do it that way, and then tomorrow you could do it a different way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Then tomorrow I'd do the dishes, and Tom gets the paper.
Huh. How's that sound, Tom? Well, I wonder, even just that you would do it this way for right now, and then you could talk more about it, how you want to do it differently tomorrow. But for right now, how do you feel about the idea of doing it this way, and then you could talk about how it could be changed later? Just that idea that it could be changed.
Yeah,
another
I could
time.
Try that. I just don't. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'll try it for once, but I just kind of want to. I don't want to get stuck.
Yeah. So you want to be able to talk again. You want to choose about how you could do things in the way you'd want to do them. Also, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's stop there. Pause the role play there. And I want to ask Kelly first. So how was it for you, Kelly, to play Will and be in the role play?
It was actually fairly realistic, and I think that the kids get tired of the process before it was completed, if it was that formal. But I don't think it's a situation that would really call for that. Formal.
Right, yeah, that's why I said, just for the sake of the learning and the practice, let's low it down and make it real formal, but then we'll work our way up to the faster, more informal.
I found it helpful.
Okay, yeah. Taylor, anything you want to report from your role?
I love being a child and saying I didn't want to do something. Because I'm always the parent. So it just felt really good to just to say that once.
How about any questions or comments or people watching? You know, anything about what I was doing and how it unfolded? Anything you want to comment on? Okay, don't see any questions. How about, Kelly, how about playing Tom? Playing Tom's role.
Okay.
And would somebody else be willing to play Will? And also someone that would like to mediate, to try doing what I was doing. And I'll help you out so you don't have to feel like you'd be struggling all alone with this. It's a very different experience to be in the mediator chair, so to speak, the virtual chair, versus watching from the outside or even from the disputant rules. I find there's learning in all these different vantage points, but there's a particular learning from being in the mediator role. So does somebody want to try that out with my help? I'll give you lots of support. And also somebody else that would want to play Will. Yes, Jan.
I would volunteer to mediate.
All right. You can mediate. And would someone like to play Karina? You'd like to play Will?
Well, I wanted to mediate, but I can play Will.
Yeah.
Quick question about doing it again. Should we kind of erase what we've already heard and start over?
Well, let's start over, and you may play it differently. You can be Will however you want to be Will. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly, in terms of playing Tom, the same. You know, you can take it in whatever direction you want. So I find even when we do these over again, they take on a whole different life because of different people playing the roles.
Right. Okay.
All right. So how about we just jump in here? And Jan, maybe would you do a little bit of out loud self-empathy, presence, kind of self-presence and empathy? We often do this in our trainings to kind of get settled into, you know, kind of get present before even starting the role play. So anything you want to name about your thoughts, feelings, needs right now, Jan?
I'm noticing a little sleepiness in my head, and so I'm just massaging my head, and I'm noticing my hands are really cold too, and so I'm just wanting to encourage myself to breathe into the moment and wake up a little bit and focus on the kids.
Okay, so are the needs for you, like wanting to be present?
I want to be present, and I guess I want to acknowledge my cold hands and just offer them a, you know, a wish that they could be warm.
Okay. All right. So how about you go ahead and start it up and give it a try.
Okay. So, Will, I'm wondering what you would like Tom to hear at this point.
I really want Tom to know that I'm just really sick of, getting the paper. I don't feel like getting the paper, and I hate getting the paper, really.
So, not enjoying it, and he'd really like to do it out of choice when it's fun. Is that part of it?
Maybe. It's just really never fun for me. I don't like getting the paper at all.
So it's just not something you're enjoying?
Mm-mm. It's not. And I want him to do it.
So...
Can I offer something here, Jan?
Yes?
I might ask a bit of an open-ended question here, actually, of something like, well, what isn't fun for you about it?
Okay.
I'm really hearing that the idea of doing this isn't fun. And help me understand what isn't, or what do you want Tom to understand about what isn't fun for you about this?
Okay. So, yeah, I'm curious, what can you say more about what isn't fun for you about it?
Well, first of all, I have to get up and put my shoes on And sometimes I don't even have socks on, and put on a hat if it's cold outside, and put, you know, I have to just get ready to go outside when I don't even want to be outside. Yeah, I want to stay here and watch cartoons.
What needs are you hearing in that, Jan?
So, you'd really like to for some choice, only what's not fun about it is it seems like it's a lot of demand, I guess.
Well, let me offer what comes
like
to me.
Wait, connected to the fun of the cartoons or something. I don't know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be, you know, so there could be the guess around choice or the fun of the cartoons. I'm also seeing it's getting close to the time to end, so I just want to, you know, kind of offer a few things myself as well. Let you know what came up for me to guess is ease. So when Will was talking about, you know, I have to put on all these clothes and, you know, oh, is that something about like you just want to have some ease right now? That seems like a lot of effort. And are you kind of tired maybe? Are you feeling a little tired and you just kind of want some rest and ease about that? So that's just one guess that came up for me. And then the part of, oh, I just want to watch cartoons, I guess comfort actually, something about wanting to stay in a place that's sort of warm and comfortable. Mm-hmm. There's sort of comfort there that you don't want to move out of, to like a physical kind of comfort. So those are, that's just an example of some other various needs that could be guessed. And the idea is like searching for what's the need. And in the back of my mind, I'm trying to, that I imagine could also be connecting for Tom, that if it's only, oh, I just want to have fun, then yeah, they both want that. And they, you know, they might think the only, you only want to have fun for yourself, you don't care about me. So I'm looking for any other needs there that might end up being connecting. So some of those needs might, you never know. Yeah? So you could get the need there. And how about we go over to Tom real quick and just, we're running out of time and I don't want to force it too much. I'm going to let go because I want to have a few minutes to debrief. But Jan, just doing that much, could you report to people how it was for you?
I think I needed some self-empathy because what was going on with me is, like, I was thinking, oh, well, he's really in the lack. How do I turn this around? And all I could think of things that were really leading, and I was having a hard time just being, you know, present.
Present, yeah.
Yes, to get to comfort or ease. That was me, because it was like, oh, he's in the lack of the need. He's in the
so
lack.
You noticed kind of some thinking about, oh, he's, in some ways, almost like a judgment, like, oh, he's just in the lack, and why can't he get out of the lack? And yeah, okay. So, and the need for self-empathy, I'm really glad you said that, because a big part of this practice for me is to be able to keep checking in with ourselves. You know, if we're involved in a conflict, it's probably triggering some reaction in us, and we're needing to do what Stephanie was talking about and giving practice with a little earlier, to just breathe and slow down and really self-connect. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. Just anything from Karina or Kelly? Kelly, you didn't get to speak, but you got to sort of be in Tom's role listening. I'd actually like to go to Kelly first, since it's your situation. How is it playing over there, even though you didn't get to speak?
Again, it was realistic, and I felt that same heading toward the judgment of when we all like to sit and watch cartoons all day, you know, kind of that, you know, heading to there. But then I liked your point about finding that common ground, like something that they could share an understanding of a need. So I thought it was useful.
Yeah. How about you, Karina? Anything you noticed?
I was a little bit kind of cautious to go down the road of, I just don't want to do it, but it also just was pulling me in that, like, I feel like there's such an element of truth in that.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
What I see where my kids come from, I just don't want to do it. I just hate doing that. And so, well, you know, thinking in my mind, well, where is that coming from?
Doing these role plays to get some real empathy for the kids you're with, to play them and to really see, you know, find find that connection to what's going on in them by playing their roles. So it's very, I find very useful for that as well. Some real insight. Ashley.
Quick question. I've noticed, especially with children, like oftentimes, not curse words, but words like dumb or stupid, or say you're asking a child, you know, what's going on for you, and you notice the children using those words like, oh, he's dumb or stupid or a baby. Would you talk about that at all? How do you approach that? Because that can get kind of personal and...
Yeah, well, I might do a little self-expression saying, you know, when you say it that way, I'm worried your brother is not going to be able to... Yeah, he might not feel very good hearing that, and I'm worried he might not really hear what you want to say and what's important to you if you say it that way, calling him a baby or things like that. And I really want you to get some understanding about this and get some cooperation for getting what you want. So I might say something about that. And then I also, what I did do in this situation is I jumped in real quick to translate it. Notice I didn't leave much time before I jumped in and said, so when you say that, is it that you... Now, and I can't remember what I said, but I took it into what his needs were. Oh, I said, is it you really want to know there's going to be that kind of equalness between you and you're kind of worried it's not going to happen? So I just took that the judgment into this real concern about wanting the need to get met. That's another option, to just take it, translate it, you know, find the need behind it and emphasize that.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Jennifer, I think you had your hand up.
I found myself, if I were in that position, I know I'd be needing empathy for myself because I was having trouble staying present in the sense of there's that part of me going, man, I just want them to get the paper so that I have a ease and man, really get the paper, you know? There's kind of that, and I find I have that experience a lot when I'm trying to mediate with my kids. I get to a certain point where it's not happening quick enough. And my presence starts to go, and I'm not sure what to do about that.
Yes, well, like you said, the self-empathy for your needs, ease and help and support and things like that. The other one that I remind myself, though, is how much I value contributing these kind of skills. So if we take the time to learn from this how to mediate a conflict, then it really meets my need for meaning and purpose and contribution. So sometimes that gives me some energy to take some extra time.
That's a really good point, because I think I lose that in the moment. That helps.
Yeah. To just say, oh, you know, go deal with your own conflicts. You know, go work it out. I mean, adults have trouble with this, you know, so we don't learn these skills. It gives me such great meaning to give the opportunity to model it and to try to learn the skills early, so... But also remembering, I also want ease and support, and those needs are really important too. If you can connect with all the needs, then sometimes you can find a way through of holding all those different needs together within yourself. All right. Well, my request of you, in addition to daily presence and self-connection practice, is to just see if you find yourself in the midst of conflicts between kids you're with, to try out this process. You won't have the spaciousness that we were playing with today, but to see if just that kind of empathizing with one, getting a need, going over to the other, and just seeing back and forth, seeing playing with it, if you trying it out. And that next time we'll practice more so they can just build your skills even more. Stephanie, anything you want to say before we end?
I'm looking forward to reconnecting with all of you next week. And thank you, John.
Yay. Yep, thank you, Stephanie, and everybody. And we'll see you next time.